Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Officials on the scene are still assessing the loss and searching for the conspirators.
The criminals responsible for last night's atrocity on Aldani think they've taken the Empire by surprise. We know better. We know the real shock will be when they discover how ready and eager we are to respond, to be prepared. Be here this morning and know that the only question we need to answer is how tight to close our fist. This is why we plan. This is why we work so hard when we're at peace. This is why we recruit so carefully and demand so much.
Welcome to the Star Wars TV Cast, episode 35. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Jason.
And I'm James. In this episode, we're covering Andor, season 1, episode 7, announcement.
Well, hello, listeners. This week, we are very happy to welcome our fearless leader, Jason Kabasi, onto the podcast. Hello, Jason.
All hail, all hail.
Oh, boy. Well, hi, guys. Thanks for asking me to come on. I appreciate it. I'm loving the show. I'm loving the podcast, and I'm super thankful that you guys wanted to do it. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Oh, we couldn't skip this one. I think it's one of the best ones so far. And Jason, what are your general thoughts and impressions of Andor so far?
Like you guys, I think it's great that it's serious Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I like that it's complex and it feels like a political thriller in some ways. I think it's beautiful the way it's laid out, and we get to see Coruscant and all these different beautiful environments. I think the acting's great. I think Andor's a really cool character.
Yeah,
I didn't know if I was going to dig a show about just Andor without that Jyn Erso to balance him out, but I'm liking it. It's too slow. Once we got to the heist, it was like, I think I liked it more than I would have if it had been just the second episode, for sure, because you're waiting for it, right? But it's not, I don't think it's it's still, like, especially getting ready to podcast on it today, that always has me slow down and appreciate the nuances and the details more, and this show has a lot of that. So I think if I'd been podcasting about it the whole time, I would the slowness wouldn't have bothered me as much, because you have a lot to dig into there, and I don't think it's a deal killer or anything, but I do feel, because I don't mind a slow burn.
Yeah,
like Better Call Saul can be a slow burn. That's one of my favorite shows, but I need every scene to feel like essential, and even if it's slow, to capture my attention. And there are times with Andor where I'm sort of like, okay, we already saw this guy eating cereal with his mom.
Yeah. You know. Although he is one of my favorite characters.
He is a really interesting character, for sure. Yeah. His mother, I'm not so sure about. But I like the show.
She's epic.
I know people like her. I don't know if I want to see that in Star Wars, but that's just me. But no, I shouldn't be focusing on that, because it's just one aspect, and overall I think it's a killer show. I think it's great. I'm so glad that they did something different with Star Wars. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Going back to the slow burn and how it does take its time, and it really changed for me when I realized that they were just doing 3-episode arcs. And that every 3-episode is a movie. And so this one, there are some great parts of it and beautiful locations and everything. But as I know that it's the first of 3, I was a little less impatient for it. So that's kind of changed my viewing of it.
That's a good idea to think of it that way. I'm going to try that too, yeah.
Yeah, no expectations for the first part of 3, is that basically?
That said, I like this episode too. I know we're not to that part yet, but I enjoyed it.
We've had a lot of reaction to the Star Wars question of the week, so why don't we kick off with that? All right, the Star Wars question of the week is, if you could spend a day with Darth Vader, what would you do?
What made you think of this?
Well, I actually found it on a Star Wars fan page. I thought it was just such a great question.
It's interesting,
You know, Jason and I have, and James, I think we've all done the Star Wars VR with Darth Vader.
Right. And, it's incredible.
I thought it was just a really kind of fun question of everyone's take on a day with Vader, and whether it'd be serious or whether he would be kind of Lego Star Wars Vader or you know, what's the chicken one, Vader as well. But anyway, let's kick it off. We had a lot of feedback, but let's start with Jason. What would you do with a day with Darth Vader?
I mean, well, when we get to the feedback that I've already seen, that's going to be a lot more interesting than me, because I thought about, if I was really there, I would just try not to be noticed and do whatever the hell he told me to do, because I think he pretty much just hangs out with underlings who are there to do his bidding. And I know he's steeped in the dark side of the Force. Mm. He's selfish, evil, extremely dangerous. I would be kind of terrified that he could sense how terrified I was of him. And ideally, I would be like, are you sure, you know, this is good for you? Is this healthy for you? But the only one who could possibly turn him around was his own son, Luke, who's like the most powerful Force user ever, and his son as well. So I would just try to stay unnoticed and not get killed, I think.
And what about you, James?
I would use him for my own selfish needs, I think. Sorry.
Impressive.
I would basically take him to the DMV and show him what real evil power is like. I mean, it's like, yeah, I'd love to see one of them stare him down and tell him to fill the form in again and go to the back of the line.
Yeah.
It's like, I recently had a day there, and I just amused myself waiting, just imagining different ways to decimate them with, you know, force pulls and like throws.
That's funny.
It's just like, you know, it's like showing Vader what a real evil empire looks like.
Yeah,
it's
right. Like, what real power looks like.
What real power is, exactly. So I wanted to cut Jonathan short with this and change it to a more sensible one. I'm like, you can just pick one Sith power. He has to teach you one, and then I engaged in the fuck it. Sorry.
Well, what would be the Sith power that you would like to be taught, James?
I don't know. I'd really like the force pull throw thing. Ever since he started dragging people through fire and stuff, I thought it was highly amusing. Yeah. If you can just, you know, marionette them, like just puppet dance people around, I think it's quite amusing.
I always dreamed about that when I was in school, you know, in class. Just that I wish I could pull my teacher up and spin her around.
Yeah.
Spin her around.
And I remember as a kid actually trying it, you know, trying to kind of like various people just to see if I could reach out with
maybe
the
it'll force. Work this time.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's weird Johnny in the corner of the room again doing that thing with his hand.
Yeah, what's that meant to do?
Has he seen a therapist? Has he seen a therapist? Yeah.
Wait, his books are floating.
Yeah.
Mom, look, it's working.
Well, for me, I went kind of straight at it, and I would like to spend a day of lightsaber training with Darth Vader.
Knew this was coming.
And getting back to the...
Jason, have you seen his room? The amount of swords Jonathan has. It's a little concerning.
I had to leave few behind when I moved back to Australia. But I did have a Viking longsword.
I got my Luke right here.
Ah, there you go. That's a beautiful thing. But I only have my samurai katana left. I had to leave the other ones behind. But it is good for training. Only. But getting back to the VR thing, I remember standing in that VR world and Darth Vader standing there towering above you. And I managed to just kind of sidle up to him and just try to press a couple of his buttons on his chest.
Excuse me.
But the amount of kind of intimidation that was still there was
so good, isn't it? Because the sound, the headset and the breathing, but it's really like when he walks in the room and the breathing gets closer and closer.
Yeah, so a day of lightsaber training would be for me, so that would be fun.
Very, very sensible.
Amazing. Yes, exactly. Yeah. But we had a ton of feedback on this one, which was really great, and I think all of them were funnier than mine.
Better than
ours. Outdone.
Yeah, and look, our loyal listeners have outdone us by a long way. So why don't we read them? And we've got so many. Well, let's read three at a time. And Jason, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Steve Barr says, "Hunt rebel scum." or take a mental health day and spend the day in meditation and back to tanks.
Yes.
Alicia Stout says, "Take him to Disneyland." Yeah, take him to the Star Wars land, right? Jeffrey H. Labby says, "Show him Star Trek movies and shows."
James, go ahead. You get the next one.
I think Cara Rex says, "Take him to Vegas and spend some time at the craps table. I'm sure the Force could be handy in influencing the roll of the dice."
Yes.
I'd love to see somebody try and escort him out of the building.
Gonna have to ask you to leave, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Crushes the dice from across the room.
Yeah.
Penny Lennox says, "Karaoke. Maybe get him to feel some human emotion. He could sing 'Carry On, My Wayward Son.'" we could do a whole thing on karaoke songs for characters. Kristen Krabsey says, "Ask him all day if I can wear his helmet until he lets me."
Please,
can I? Come on, just one time.
That's one of
I won't judge you. I don't care what you look like.
It's my turn.
Yes, and I kind of imagined this, as did our listeners, as a buddy movie with Darth Vader. And so Bianx Vargas says, "Push his buttons."
That's my favorite one.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yes, very good.
Because who knows what they do? And Megan Dively Lehman says, "Have him smite my enemies." Sadie Wright, "Get him to give me flying lessons." I was wondering if that was with the Force or with his TIE fighter.
Yeah, that's what I was curious. Must have been in the TIE fighter.
Yeah, like does he push those buttons or does one of his assistants?
That's true.
Have to control those? I don't know what those are for. Alma Contreras says, I would have him take me on a tour of the Death Star. Nice.
That would
Whitney
be cool.
Janes, "Why would I want to spend a day with Darth Vader? I'd take him to the desert. I know how much he loves sand." And Jody Langridge says, "A spa day. We all know he could use a good facial."
Ooh, harsh, Jody, harsh. Jerry Gomez says, "Use the Force to pull weeds." I'm presuming we're talking gardening here,
yes.
But I don't know, Jerry. Amelia Rochette says, "Breathing exercises." Yep, true. He's got it down, I suppose. Yeah. His range isn't very good, though.
Yeah.
It's all kind of very similar. And then I like this one, Elizabeth Irwin, "Reenact scenes from Spaceballs."
That's great.
You're just not taking it serious, Elizabeth.
Have you guys seen this YouTube video? I think it's Darth Vader sings the blues or something. It's the scene where Luke pulls off his helmet in Return of the Jedi, but then he starts playing his mask like a harmonica.
Oh, I have seen that. Yeah.
So funny, man. Go check it out. It's great.
Yes. Star Wars is deep. That's why we love it. And lastly, Damien Vitale playing disc golf. Hope he doesn't cheat. Yes, that would be kind of easy, wouldn't it?
He'll cheat.
Yeah, well done, everybody. That was very satisfying and very, very funny. Good to see everyone's got a very good sense of humour out there. Let's move on to our first thoughts and reactions. After the news of the heist breaks galaxy-wide, as I'm sure it's being said in every article, YouTube, podcast, the Empire Strikes Back. So, Jason, what are your first thoughts on the episode?
I really liked it. It's kind of the aftermath of this heist, and it was a lot more interesting than I would think that was going to be, because there were some revelations about it, and just seeing Andor and what he decides to do, and some great scenes there. Mm. So I was pretty engaged throughout the whole episode. I enjoyed it. And it was also just beautiful to see more of Coruscant and everything. So it was very good.
Excellent. And James?
And like I've said for every episode, it's great. I thought after we had episode 4 and 5 on the slow burns,
yeah,
I was like, oh, here we go again. But this is like a bubbling cauldron.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just intense. And as you say, and you mentioned earlier, Jason, it's like, it is a political sort of thriller now in place. And it's like, we talked about before how it was like World War II references to films. I feel we're in the world of The Godfather now, and so especially with all the other stuff that's going on. There's so many things sort of like bubbling along and going along. I think it was good. And I like the feeling that we're starting to feel all these threads pulling together. Mm. You know, there's no laser fights, there's no like TIE fighters or anything, but you can just feel the tension starting to pull.
Yeah,
and I think it's a really nice pace to an episode.
Yeah, well, great. Well, I think it's an episode of consequences, basically, and it's great to see that in a Star Wars film where actions have consequences. And well, let's get into our review of episode 7, announcement. All right, this episode is called Announcement, Episode 7, and it's directed by Benjamin Caron, and he did The Crown and Sherlock, which is what I could find, and written by Stephen Schiff, and interestingly, he did The Americans. He was a writer on The Americans, so there we have some Cold War drama as a background. Yeah. It's created by Tony Gilroy, of course, and let's get into it. Jason, what's your first point?
My first point is Luthen Rael's aims. So I love we're getting the backstory of Mon Mothma, by the way. I always found her to be a fascinating character, and it's really interesting to see how she's had to try to navigate government but stay kind of hidden and stuff. And I think they picked the right actress. She's doing really good. So she goes to talk to Rael. Am I saying that right? Luthen Rael?
Yeah, I think so.
And so...
Yeah, we're just referring to him as Luthen.
Luthen, okay. Yeah. And
we're on
so,
first name terms now.
right. He's very familiar. For the first time, we get a clear picture of why he instigated this heist to get the payroll of an entire sector. Mm. I mean, we know the rebellion needs money, but that was secondary. And she... I haven't been paying as close attention as you guys, but I was surprised to know that she didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing? and she's like, you told me we were building a network. And he's like, well, the network's built, but now they can either grow or die. And she says, Palpatine won't hesitate now. And he goes, exactly. We need fear. Yeah. And so that's what it was all about. Just getting the Empire to tighten its fist and be more brutal in reaction to this to motivate people to fight back. Right. He doesn't say that part, but it's like, it makes sense. If you're going to, in real life, rebellions don't just happen willy nilly. Mm. Most people are not ready to risk their lives to go fight unless they're pushed to their limits. And he wanted to push the Empire to exercise this control and brutality so people are fed up enough to fight. And it makes sense. But the part where it gets complicated is when his assistant meets with the leader of Vel Sarah. What's her name?
Yeah, Vel.
Vel. And tells her to find and kill Andor. And I was like, what the fuck? Oh, sorry. You guys aren't swearing, huh? Sorry.
No, I've been swearing a lot, apparently.
Holy crap. Stop it. But, man, and she goes, this is what revolution looks like. Do you think she would do it? It was hard to tell by her reaction.
Well, she clearly doesn't. So.
Yeah.
She doesn't. That's true.
Unless we go back to my theory of him being a clone.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
Exactly.
But then I'm like, oh, well, now maybe I don't like Luthen's attitude about sacrificing people. It always feels more complicated when the people who are going to suffer are people we know and care about, right? But I love it as a story point. It makes his character more interesting and this whole thing more interesting. And then I thought, okay, when he was recruiting Andor, it seemed like he was like, you're the guy we need. Yeah. Come on, come fight with us. And I looked back and he just said, don't you want to fight these bastards for real? But the part he left out was, and then die? And, it turns out, I think he just needed his specific skill for this specific mission.
Yeah.
Right? He was totally using him. And as we know, he does end up sacrificing himself. I mean, I don't know for the rebellion, but he's not ready to do that right now, I don't think.
No, not right now, no. But I mean, it almost goes back to what Nemec was saying in the week before about using every tool in the box, in effect.
Right.
So it's like, you know, he's basically sculpted and created Cassian because he wasn't this person at, you know, the very beginning, and then he tosses him away like a used toy.
Well,
or does he?
Luthen was saying that the Empire is slowly choking them, so much so that we're not even noticing, and it's time to force their hand. And Mon Mothma says, well, but people will suffer. And he turns around to her and says, well, that's the plan.
That's the point.
You know, is to create this chaos to make a lot of people rebel against the Empire. Because as you were saying, Jason, it's just sort of like, it's all very well to raise money and to talk about it, but to actually live and die for a rebellion, that's a huge leap.
Mm-hmm. And you got to get started sometime. And he said, we can't stay hidden forever. And I don't know if Mon Mothma had some other clear idea in her mind of how to get this thing going, but I don't think so. I think what he said to her, something like, you know, I'm just saying what you already know, but don't want to say out loud or something. Like something like this has to happen at some point. And we know that 5 years after this is when the Death Star gets exploded. And then I think, so it's like 9 years after this that the whole Empire is thrown down. And so I wonder if his actions helped. I think it's likely that they did, right?
Yeah.
That this incident is, without it, maybe it would have been more years or it wouldn't have even happened. Who knows?
Yeah. And then even if it's delayed by a little bit, the Death Star is operational and it's all over. So it's, it was important. The timing of it is, it had to happen now. So yeah, interesting.
But well, I'll tell you the secret. The Death Star is actually fully operational. But not for very long, though.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, we'll all do our Tarkin impersonation at one point.
I'd just like to say on this point as well, I obviously love like Deirdre's character anyway, but I just love the fact that she's got a finger on the pulse and she's fuming because she knows they've played directly into the rebels' hands at this point. It's exactly the strategy that they want. And she's the one who mentions, well, it's an announcement is what they've done. And it's good. And then if you jump a little later on, it's like when Marva decides that she's part of the rebellion.
Yeah.
And the story she tells of, you know, when she heard of the attack on Aldani, it gave her, wait for it, it gave her, what did it give her? It gave her hope. It gave her new hope, everybody.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
But seriously, she, for the first time, she proudly walked through the streets and she walked through the square where her husband had been hung by them and stuff. And she, and that was the spark that we imagine happens across the galaxy. And this is what Luthen was banking on. Yes, people have died. Yes, people will die. But now there is a cause. Now there is a reason. And also, there's a glimmer of hope. I said the word again. But because they succeeded, they took from the Empire and they've hurt the Empire, and the Empire is clearly is fuming about this. And so it's as Deirdre sort of is annoyed, as we've played into their hands, we've basically created the rebellion by crushing, you know, trying to crush them with the grip now. So played quite nicely across both sides.
I love that. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Mara's actions are just immediate evidence that Luthen's plan worked.
And I love the final scene of her where she's just walking and, you know, Cassian's leaving and it's all like, you know, they're all upset and they're leaving. and this old lady walks away and picks up a shotgun or whatever. And it's like, it's just that, just dropping out of focus, out of frame. They don't make a big thing of it. Mm. You just see her basically pick up the gun. She probably hasn't fired in, you know, 10 years since her, and they all came to the planet and stuff. So I thought that was a great moment, and I was excited to see Marva back. I love Fiona Shaw.
Yeah, she was so good.
A great character.
I think this was my favorite sequence with her. It's overdue and probably doomed, and I'm too old and I don't care anymore.
Yes. And I love the exchange where she describes like hearing about the attack and how it inspired her, and you can just see Cassian's face. And he's like, he wants to tell her that I actually did that, but all she's saying is, I understand this isn't your path and all you want to do is run away with your money, your chicken shit.
But why didn't he say something? I don't know if it matters. To keep it quiet. Yeah.
No, it probably doesn't. I mean,
what would be the difference? Maybe she'd be proud of him, but it's really interesting because he did that attack, and he did it, we find out, because he wants to take it easy, and this was the big score. Yeah. But it actually ended up causing not only a greater Empire presence that is, you know, he can't get away from them, but yeah, also his mom to go off and join the rebellion. He's like, God damn it!
Not what I had planned. I was gonna put you in a lovely retirement home planet somewhere, but no, you are now funding the rebellion.
I just wanted to go to Sandals and relax with cocktails.
Well, can we go to another galaxy?
Don't.
Yeah. That's great. All right, James, what's your first point?
It's carrying on from that, from Cassian, really. I mean, yeah. So he goes home. I'm like, yeah, that's a risky move.
That is a really risky move.
I started off thinking, is he naive or is he just arrogant? And then as it plays out, he's like, he's naive. And as we find out a bit later where he goes to see Bix and he's trying to get her to come with him. And she points out that a lot of people blame you idiot. you have now caused us from being, yes, we were working for a corporation, it wasn't great and all the rest of it, but now we've got goose stepping sort of stormtroopers everywhere. Yeah. Again,
it's like a smaller version of what the attack did, just in his little localized place. Now they've drawn more heat down on him,
and you know, he thinks he's come back and he's paying his dues and everyone will be fine with him and he's popped back and stuff. But what I did love was that flashback where then we learn why he took the name of Clem,
right,
as his pseudonym. And as he sees his, you know, his surrogate father or whatever.
I was thinking about that, but didn't Luthen give him the name Clem?
That's what I was. I couldn't remember. Did he? Or
I think he said, "You need another name."
No, he said, "Pick a name."
And he said, "Clem."
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then the shot in the snow where you just see in the foreground like the hanging corpse. Mm. When he's wielding the stick and he runs towards the four stormtroopers who pull their rifles, and I imagine that is the moment that he goes to the correctional facility,
right?
And that starts that whole sort of spin of, you know, and how he ends up in effect almost being conscripted and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see another not over the top flashback that works perfectly. Again, back to my fear of the flashback of the, you know, the origin story of the children
going back to,
you
know, kids in Star Wars.
Yeah, I think Jason, I panicked that we were getting Caravan of Courage when I was told about the beginning, but they've handled it perfectly, and again this was just enough to, but it cuts back to the modern day and he sees those two stormtroopers, and I've just watched that scene and I wanted to go and take them out,
right?
And he just shudders and he slips off to like South Beach, Miami planet, or where he goes.
Well, the planet that he's on is so empty and so kind of under the cosh of the Empire that he's the only one on the streets and it's just being patrolled. So I imagine after the telling off from Bix, he doesn't want to create any further trouble by just taking out a couple of stormtroopers.
Yeah, to be fair, he killed two people and that started the whole thing. Yeah. Maybe he learned a lesson. Or not? Mm. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's now a killer, but yeah. But I found it sort of fascinating that he would go back. But I mean, it's a great sort of like plot line because then we get to see Marva and we explain all of that. So it was a good one. And I have to just say it from a fashion point. I really want his winter coat. that the big hood. I mean, it's basically if you took if you took Han's coat from Hoth,
right,
and did and Jonathan did some light tailoring.
Yes, did some light tailoring. Yeah.
But he doesn't really know how to not look very suspicious because he puts the hood on and he's looking all around. And he goes around the corner
all the time. And he's and he's the only person in the street scuttling around. There's clearly like some kind of
something's up with that
curfew
guy.
Or something.
Yeah.
And he's the only dude, and he fits the description of the dude they're all after. And like, yeah, not cool. And he goes to a place that they know that his ex-girlfriend works. So it's a miracle they didn't catch him.
I'm shocked it wasn't. The both places weren't being watched.
Yeah.
Mm. Plot yeah, point. That's very true.
And Marva says, "Don't look for your sister anymore. That's a fantasy."
Right.
And I'm like, okay, do I believe her? This is Star Wars. Mm. Bix could end up being a sister for all we know.
That'd be weird. But very Star Wars. Yeah.
I think he'll find her, but I don't know.
I thought that they'd just let that go and wouldn't be coming back to that as a plot point, but they brought it up again, so maybe it will be part of it. All right, great. So my first point, and I am loving the ISB, and I loved the almost cold open of the ISB when Colonel Yularen was doing the voiceover and Deirdre was getting ready, you know, armoring up. But it's interesting, the internet has let me know that Colonel Yularen was actually Admiral Yularen, and he was seen in the meeting with Darth Vader in A New Hope when Tarkin, they're all sitting around the table. There was only one guy dressed in white, and apparently that's him. And for some background from Wikipedia,
that's cool.
Admiral Yularen in 1977, this high-ranking intelligence officer of the Imperial Security Bureau first popped up as a background character early in the film. He is a notably white-coated officer sitting around the Death Star conference room table with Grand Moff Tarkin. When Grand Moff Tarkin announces the Emperor has dissolved the Imperial Senate. Mm. Played in that scene by poker-faced Robert Clark, Colonel Yularen never speaks, never even seems to react to the drama that unfolds when Darth Vader arrives, and we never actually learned a single thing about him in 1977 beyond the fact that he wore a different colour uniform than the other Imperials.
He invoked the name of Palpatine, though. That was pretty chilling just to hear it.
Wasn't that interesting that when you hear Palpatine just casually mentioned in passing, very chilling.
I thought so.
But I wanted to go through what now Colonel Yularen was saying in that voiceover and all the consequences of Cassian's actions. And he was basically wondering how tight we were going to close our fist. And so let's go through the repercussions of the robbery. He said there was going to be a tribute tax five times stolen from Aldani, so $400 million for any partisan activity. Use of any local custom, festival, or tradition as cover for rebel activity would result in the permanent revocation of imperial tolerance. Mm-hmm. So they're basically just tolerating people. And as we said before, then he mentions Emperor Palpatine. Palpatine said that the ISB would be taking the lead. There would be no problem with any army or navy resources getting any of those. There was an emergency session in the Senate to free our hands in all matters of surveillance, search, and seizure. And so they can just do whatever they want now. And then.
Well, I think that Senate session that they mentioned Palpatine's bringing in is basically the one where he basically creates the equivalent of like martial law for the galaxy, isn't it? Where he basically will dissolve the Senate.
Mm.
I imagine so.
It's not officially absolved until Star Wars, because then we hear him say it, but pretty much hobbled, right?
Exactly as we saw last week. Mm. Yeah, it's like a puppet thing. You've only got like maybe like 20 or 30 of the planetary sort of like delegates are there, and everything else is just empty. So it's. It's on the cards. And
Well, I love that how everyone is just living under imperial tolerance, not even imperial rule. They're just tolerating their existence throughout the galaxy.
The first one you mentioned, the one about anyone, you know, harboring any partisan activity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mothma described herself to her friend that she was trying to get help with money. The front that she puts on is, quote, "I'm a polite, sometimes indecisive senator who spends her days fighting and failing to protect separatist do-gooders and battle empire yeah. overreach." And she says, "I've learned from Palpatine, if I show you the stone in my hand, you'll miss the knife at your throat." But I think what, levying this tax on any sector harboring partisan activity, she's describing partisan activity there, I think.
Yeah.
And so now her cover is not going to work. That stone's not going to be tolerated anymore. The stone in the hand won't even be tolerated, you know?
Time for the knife.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Which we'll get to. I love that quote that she comes up with. You know, like, I learned a lot from Palpatine.
Yeah, right.
The stone in hand, and then basically that he is the master of misdirection and deception.
Yep.
Colonel Yularen goes on to say, "Any criminal act affecting the Empire, even indirectly, will be branded a Class 1 civil offence, and all prison sentences will be immediately reevaluated, all fines and levies to be paid in full." And this is the moment where Deirdre realises that they're playing straight into the hands of the rebels, her assistant says, "This is not a robbery." And then she name checks the name of the episode, and she says, "Yes, it's an announcement." So I thought it's really interesting that we go through the tightening of the grip and the system slipping through the fingers of.
You got there before me.
I'll find the quote, and so
that soundbite.
Don't fail me again.
And so I just think it was a great way to kick off the episode with the ISB, the repercussions from the ISB.
Mm-hmm. And we'll probably go into more detail, but this is why Andor is in prison for 6 years now. So because of this crackdown, you know, it's why he got arrested for no reason. I mean, bad luck.
Yeah.
And why there was even soldiers there. It's all as a result of him being on this raid, trying to get money to go live a good life. It's interesting.
And it seems like the Empire were just waiting for something to happen so they could really, really put the hammer down and really show their strength and not pretend to be tolerating really anything. And it's just going to be a full forced Empire just in charge of everything and everyone. Mm-hmm.
I think both sides are kind of relieved. I think it's like what Luthen was saying about we've been slowly choked by the Empire and stuff, and then the Empire's itching to get going. Like they're building a ton of like evil Star Destroyers and the Death Star and stuff. Like we got to roll this now. And so it's now it's like okay, now the gloves are off. This is a real fight. We've in effect almost announced the rebellion at this point. Close to war times.
Yeah, well, what was that quote from Luthen when he held out the club that it was something like a weapon?
Something like, was it?
No one builds a weapon that isn't going to be used.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think I'm saying this guy's name right, but Major Partagaz?
He said something
about, okay, now you understand why in times of peace we've built up basically the capability to crush people, because of a time like this.
Yeah, and they've just pulled the trigger on it, and now we have the Empire in full force, which will hopefully see the rebellion.
Yeah.
I loved how this is illustrated when you see Cinta and she looks up.
Oh, yeah.
And that Star Destroyer just like comes over again. We're in low altitude,
In atmosphere.
In atmosphere, and it's flanked by TIE fighters. And it's like, all right.
I appreciated that little detail as well. That
Luthen heard over some radio 134 Aldani residents taken into custody under suspicion of aiding the terrorists, too. So, more consequences. Mm. People are suffering.
More
already.
Consequences.
Yeah. No, bloody Cassian.
All because
I wonder if they got Bryan Cranston. Did they get Bryan Cranston?
All because those two guys wanted to hook up first when he was in the brothel.
It happens.
All right. Yeah, it happens, yeah.
A lesson for us all there, gentlemen, when at strip clubs. Wait your turn.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
All right, Jason, what's your next point?
Just some things about Dedra Miro, who I also think is a great character. And the way the actress plays it, it's really good. She just seems like she's trying to do her job and do it well and has to suffer fools and deal with red tape and navigate the politics of it, even though she's the smartest one and she's right about everything. And, and she realizes that the rebels are stealing tech for something across star systems, and also that the result of this attack was to make the Empire crack down so that people would have more of a reason to rebel. And she seems kind of like she's playing the good sort of Imperial villain where she's buttoned down and stressed and tight. But I also like when, like, that whole thing with her and her nemesis Blevin lodges charges against her for going against protocol. He's such a nudnik, and it seems like the boss is going to go against her, but he ends up praising her. And then you can just, the camera goes to her first, and then
look of surprise.
And she barely moves her face, but you can tell she's so proud and like, haha, motherfucker. And the other guy just, he barely moves his face either, but he just seems ashamed. He kind of sinks down a little bit. And it just made me laugh.
Well, he thinks that he really thinks that he knows how things are going to go, and he thinks that it's not results that are important, but how the game is played, and making sure that his own little fiefdom is all in control rather than actually winning the war.
Well, he knows that Partagaz is the one who came up with these sectors, so he's totally kissing up by saying, she's not respecting the thing that you did. And the guy's and what she says is, do you think rebels care about lines we draw on a map or something like that? And that's smart, and it's thinking outside the box. And then I love how he pulled her aside, like he was going to give her a speech or something, and he goes, well played, watch your back, see ya. Because he's had to navigate all this stuff too, because I think we really get a sense of the Empire is like a cutthroat corporation. You get the sense that different businesses have different company cultures, and in some it's more like this, where you got to watch your back and try to, you know, claw your way to the top and throw the other guy under the bus. And then we see the other power dynamic with her when she's with her nervous underling telling him to prep a record of all the missing equipment, and he fears her, and she uses that just like any good Imperial officer would. I think she knows the company culture, right? And she's like, exactly. And he's like, she's like, I need this report kept confidential. Do you think you can handle that level of discretion? Absolutely. Yes, can do. Will do. Will do.
Will do. Yeah.
And remember, guys, there is no try.
Yeah, that's right. She and Yoda would get along.
Do or do not.
See, throw in the Yoda quote there, Jonathan. You can throw that one in.
That's
well,
great.
Right,
so.
Do or do not. There is no try.
So it just gives me the sense that that's the way the Empire is structured. It's hierarchical, fear, intimidation based, not just with outsiders, but within the organization too. It's really interesting.
So no one really, that amount of fear that the people find themselves getting into trouble, which is why Dedra's rival is just staying within his lane and thinking he's doing the right thing. But in actual fact, with Major Partagaz, who can certainly run a meeting, I love what he's been doing.
he's great.
And it's just classic, classic casting. And I've got a couple of quotes from him. Was it, Mr. Blevin, I sense something eager in you this morning. So you can imagine just Blevin sitting there. He's got his little point that he wants to make up, and he's ready to destroy Dedra, but it all falls apart. And as they're arguing, that she says kind of through clenched teeth, systems either change or die. And then he looks at her and she goes, sir.
And then he goes, theory or something.
Yeah, exactly. He turns to her and says, thesis, please. That's right. And which I thought was such so good. A good line. Mm-hmm. And then
doesn't he end? And doesn't he end with was that entertaining session?
Yeah,
or
he says, "Thank you all for the lively session."
There you go. That's brilliant. It's like, oh, you made my morning meeting interesting. Yeah, well done, kids.
Yeah. Like for much. Only in Star Wars can a meeting be made so interesting and beautiful as well as well as a sea of cubicles, you know, that we can see later.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, we'll keep that for the Star Wars waited, section. no, that's okay. Yeah. All right, so that's great, James. Is it James? Are you next? Yes.
I'll have a go at this. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to jump forward a bit, and again, I've got my axe to grind with Cassian again. It's like you can go anywhere in the galaxy. He's already told Marva, I can go anywhere in the galaxy. We can get away from this, and he goes to like what only can be described as either Atlantic City or Miami South Beach on a bad day. Yeah, and it's brilliant. And you've got like you've literally got the wrinkly old. Humans and aliens, there's really bad house music going, and they're cackling and they're sipping on these multicolored drinks. I just love, he's obviously hooked up with this girl who's like another, like, you know, she's like an annoying English girl. And I just, oh, go out and get. What, she's asking for the greeny green things or the something, something. Is that like, is that breakfast or is that more drugs? I don't know what she's talking about.
She said piso, probably. Too, whatever that is.
Pizzos.
Well, like, I was.
If I can, I did do
Jonathan's,
some...
Here we go.
I did preparate. Now that I'm back home, I've got time to do some preparation. Okay. Again, according to Wikipedia.
Pizzos, the Bible.
Yeah, the Bible. Pizzos are a type of food. Windy, that was a human pretty who vague. Slept with Cassie Nandor. Yeah. While he was on the Armus, asked him to run and buy some more Regnog and Pizzos when he went out, since they're out of both. And there was actually in an earlier... part of the episode, there was a holographic ad saying tasty pizzas in Orobesh that was featured on a building in Coruscant, which I thought was a deep dive reference.
Wow. So it's a global sort of Takis or something.
That's what I'm
thinking. I guess it's just a snack food of some sort.
But I feel like he's a player, right? He just has a woman in every port kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he's hiding his money above the shower unit. That's funny.
The old roof panel of the hotel room. Yeah,
That old trick. And he just tucks a couple of like creds into his pants, and then he's off again.
Yeah.
But I just love, you know, it's just this weird sort of coastal sort of like town or anything. But just the scene, again, you mentioned it before, like the shore troopers and stuff. Like just to see... the different variations of Imperial troops that are left over from Clone Wars and have just, you know, cobbled together. I think it was...
Well, have we seen Shore Troopers before? That's new as far as I know.
We see them in Rogue One. Yeah, because they send them out because they're on the shore there and stuff. But, I mean, in this series, it's the first time we've seen them and stuff. But
Troopers.
I just love seeing this.
Tropical Troopers.
Yeah, Tropical Troopers. Are we back to, like, snacks?
Yeah, exactly right.
Imagine a bag of... Go and get us a bag of Tropical Troopers.
The green ones.
the greeny green ones. Or just the green ones, Jonathan. Yeah. Which one do we want?
Help you again? Yes.
I just thought that. I mean, it's always fun to see a different Star Wars planet and stuff. And that was very different from what we're seeing. And it's obviously it's a casual sort of like. And I love he's. I'm a tourist. As you say.
I mean, he didn't do anything wrong.
No.
Yeah.
But he did look hyper suspicious.
He looks shifty, doesn't he?
That's the thing.
He always looks shifty.
Yeah,
you know, I know. that somebody described him to me, and I can't get it out of my head now. So a mate of mine from back home goes, I just can't get it out of my head. He just looks like a young Paul McCartney. And now that's all I see when I see him now. I'm like, fuck.
And do you guys think so? He gets accosted by these troopers. And yeah. I love when he's like, because then more guys run, something's happening, and he's, you know, the guy's like, maybe I need to chase them. And he goes, I can wait for you here if you want. Sure. But then we see the security droid coming in from the beach. And my thought was they wanted us to have a feeling of like heart because, oh, look, K2SO. Mm. And then he's got two guys in his hands and it's like, no, bum, bum, bum.
That's the security
droid. Was that what they were going for there? Like kind of. Because they know we have positive associations.
Yeah, no, absolutely right.
I think I got excited. I thought, oh my God, this is how you know they meet. Yeah. And I read up on it, and they're actually described as KX.
KX, which is obviously like the
security version. But when he tells him to hang here, and he's like, hang. Yeah. And he's like,
no. That's not what he meant. No, a little silly.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this scene. Like when you come flying in the opening of it and you see all those birds flying across. And
And that was like Miami Vice.
Yeah.
It was
and the music was like that as well. That's what it was. I was trying to figure out what the music was.
We could have Star Wars Crockett and Tubbs. Yeah.
I could see him wearing that outfit with the glasses.
Oh, yes. He's got espadrilles on. He'd get arrested for that alone, I think. That'd be it.
A powder blue linen suit.
He'd have an espadrilles. 6 years.
Land speeder, just all like down, close to the ground.
Yeah. He's underlit and all the rest of it. Brilliant.
But it was super funny, and it was classic Star Wars humor because it was all situational, and things were just funny. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a gag when he goes, you know, I can just wait here. It's kind of a farcical thing to say, but
we've all been in that situation. Yeah.
Let me try this. It's a long shot, but worth a shot.
But it wasn't actually a joke. You know, it was in situational funny, which is classic Star Wars humor rather than going back to Rian Johnson with his prank calls that they did. Remember he did that prank call? That was so... I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. I'm podcasting about the show Dead to Me right now on Netflix. It's this kind of dark comedy. And I was just saying, we were just talking about it yesterday, how the humor in that show is... It's never cheap. It never sacrifices character. It actually sometimes even deepens the character, you know? And if you can pull that off, that's the best. Yeah. Like a lot of times they say a joke that the character wouldn't ever say just because they're going, like, that's what you're saying. Yeah. I'm just repeating you, but yeah.
Yeah. No, but that's exactly right. But that's what I feel that Andor is getting nearly everything right. The only thing obviously is the pacing, but I've kind of settled into it now, and like Jason, you're probably watching a thousand shows at once, this feels a bit slower maybe. But I've as I've been on the road, I've really only been watching Rings of Power and Andor, and again after I realized that they do 3-episode arc movies, I really settled into this first episode, and I was able to be patient.
That's cool. Yeah, I think I'm going to appreciate it more after this experience. I want to say something about Rings of Power. I'm going to say it without spoiling anything, but I have to tell, because I heard your episode when you were on and you were like, how are they possibly going to survive this? And then they just kind of brushed it off.
I've not watched any.
Okay, I'm not, I don't want to spoil it, but.
But that was just, that was just like, okay. That was.
Is it good? Is it good? Is it worth me? I've got a very long flight. Next week, maybe I should binge.
It's definitely worth a binge. I find the characters not always my favorite. Galadriel, she's not Galadriel to me. But you know, she has a couple of thousand years to turn into that. But
no,
she was unlikable. Yeah. I thought.
I think because just from what I've heard of you, you're going to appreciate it because of the production.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
Exactly.
But there is more to appreciate besides just the production, but the production is incredible.
Yeah.
It's one of the most incredible shows I've ever seen in that regard.
I will definitely give it a go. I think I watched the first one, and I'll dump them onto the iPad anyway.
But I must say I enjoyed it more than I expected to. Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
All right. back to Star Wars. Star Wars sound effect. So I want to talk about Cyril Khan. He's one of my favorite characters, and we open the episode with
mother.
Him sitting in that room, still looking up, and he's just sitting there looking up from the depths of Coruscant. You know,
he is, isn't he?
Yeah. And so he goes out to meet his mother. She berates him. Oh, and I found out. I looked up who Khan's mother was because she does look familiar to me. I couldn't work out where who was it. Her name is, hang on, let me try this. Ekaterini Hadjilopiratis, and she's known professionally.
Rolls off the tongue.
Rolls off the tongue. As is maybe why she changed her name to Catherine Hunter. And she's she's an American-born British actress and theatre director, and she's known for her appearance as Arabella Figg in the Harry Potter film series.
Oh,
yeah. And
okay.
So she was actually being questioned on that high chair. I think that she was looking after Harry Potter at one point. But if you look for a still of her, you'll recognize her.
She's great in this.
I really enjoyed it. But Jason, I'm interested to
well,
to hear
I like a character like this, and I like interactions like this, but when I'm already feeling like it's could be a bit faster,
right.
And then we got another scene of it's just like I don't want to watch. Well, I was going to say I don't want to watch an indie movie, but I've heard you say this whole thing has kind of an indie movie feel, and I think that's kind of cool. But I don't know. I guess this is the one scene where this relationship where I'm like, okay, I get it. I understand the relationship he has with his mother. We don't have to keep hitting these same emotional beats again. I'm not enjoying it enough to overlook that we've already know that, you know. But it's not a big deal. I mean, it's fine. Did you guys, his name's Cyril and he's eating cereal all the time. Is that a coincidence?
Well, it's spelt with an S apparently, so maybe not. But did you enjoy the cereal scene? It was a little bit too real world for you?
No, it was okay. Yeah, it was fine. I mean, she's telling him that because he has a high collar, it means that he's just looking for attention and thinks he's not good enough or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know people like that. I have them.
Right.
I have an aunt like that who will interpret anything in the most negative and insulting way possible. And it's just disheartening.
It is disheartening.
It's
but
funny.
The funny thing is like he's still doing his light tailoring, which I thought was one of the one of the best comments. Just some light tailoring.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but he still is furious at the law being broken. Like when he's being shown around for his job that his uncle got him into, and will we ever meet his uncle? I don't know. Maybe it'll
remain a
mystery.
I'm a bit disappointed in this.
It'll be a Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Darth Vader. No, I don't know. I wanted him to be like some mob boss, but he's clearly like...
No.
Uncle Moff, like, Uncle Tarkin.
Yeah.
but it will be CG, sort of Moff pops his head up again.
Yes, and so I was right, James. I hate to tell you this. I just thought he was a high perfunctory within the Empire that was able to get him a decent job.
There's five episodes left.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's great because it's a sea of cubicles, and
so good.
Weights and gauges may seem more vibrant than redundancy or verification, but walk the floor, talk to any lifetime employee, you'll be surprised. And it's the kind of job your uncle would get you. It's a desk job, and it's like space, office space.
I love his lifetime employees.
The look at his face when he mentioned, lifetime employees, it was just so classic. And he's like, there's no
it's
small
funny.
Jobs at the Bureau of Standards.
I have to say though, just those cubicles and stuff. This is Star Wars, right? So and as you've said before, Jonathan, they don't build things small.
No.
They don't need to. Everything's big and mechanical and stuff. But I can't help thinking, right, in any universe where we can fly from planet to planet with hyperspace, build huge starships, do anything we want, Is there not a computer or an AI that could replace all these cubicles?
Well, yeah, this is true.
Could you know?
But I wonder what they're doing, because they've got the dual screens and it was so beautifully designed, those little
pods. It's the Star Wars design. It's epic, and it looks incredible when it pulls that the final frame where it starts on his eyes and then the screen. And then it pulls back, and it pulls back, and then it cuts to black, and it's like, you're done, so you're there forever.
Reminded me of, Brazil? Where it was all just that old film where it was just, reminded me a little bit of that. But again, I think it's, as you said, James, about things are big in Star Wars, and everything's
very
mechanical.
They can just build stuff.
They just keep building. It was just knobs and dials again on the computer screen when we saw him, and who knows what he was doing, but he was just processing information. But that's what I love about this kind of analog future, which was designed in 1977. There is no miniaturization.
And they stuck to it. Yeah.
And everything is still switches and pulleys and levers and things like that. So we do get this grand scale.
And you don't get sensors much of a network either.
No.
There's not really much of an internet. You can't work from home. You need to be at the office.
No one's
working from home in this office.
Yeah, it's just a LAN party. It's one big LAN party.
The Empire's not putting up with that, working from home business.
We're not having that Wi-Fi nonsense. None of that.
Cracking down.
Yeah.
Cracking down.
Perhaps you think you're being treated unfairly.
But the sets are incredible, I thought, and just the scale that the Empire employs is just so dehumanizing and kind of reduces everyone to a number. And that pod that he is faced with spending the rest of his life is, I look forward to see his next chapter and how he gets re-involved into the tale.
I
just love the. He will. They can't spend this. You're right. The amount of payoff.
It'd be funny if he didn't.
He never does. Yeah. We don't see him till the very. We see him at the very end of the final episode, and he's on the Death Star, and it blows up or something.
Well, we just keep
finally made it.
Yeah. We finally made it. Woohoo! Big time. Yeah. He's gone.
We just keep.
But I just love.
Go on, James. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I just love the fact when the guy's walking around with the clipboard and goes, "Oh, we have an opening."
Yeah.
In here, and it's literally the ominous empty cubicle right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's like there's no getting out of this. It's your uncle who's got you a job.
But what I like about his character, he's still so furious about the law being broken when he spots the new news of the raid, the Cassian. I thought that was the moment they were going to show a photo of Cassian, and that would be his link to getting back into the story. Yeah. But it was just he's just still so furious about it, and he's still desperate for justice and wants to clear his name at any cost. He's still thinking that he's involved, but no, he's just going to be put in that pod.
Nah, he'll be out. He'll be out soon.
He says to, because the manager seemed to. Oh, wait, what's this in your file here? And he said, there's a rebel murderer running free because of corruption and laxity in the corporate authority. I was punished for trying to uphold the law, do my job, maintain public safety. Two men dead, co-workers. I believe that we have laws for a reason. And all of that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like Miro, just trying to do his job. People died. Mm-hmm. That's what he was supposed to do. But the thing is, well, he comes off unsympathetic to some because he's very low on charm and he carries himself stiffly. You know, when he tried to give that inspiring speech a couple episodes ago. But also, like, his commanding officer kind of deduced what really happened, right? That those two guys were assholes and they probably deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were probably hassling someone. And he's such a stickler for the letter of the law and doesn't care who is morally right. He just wants more laws and more authority.
Yep.
And so that's where his flaw is. He sees any gray area or nuance as corruption and laxity.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Which is perfect for this show because it's all about the gray areas. So he's a good foil to put in there of this is by the books. This is how you do it. And it's clearly the most painful scenes for Jason to watch.
I enjoy his character. I just want him to do something. But I actually like the office part better.
Yeah,
I don't know
that
why.
Was great.
I found it really amusing. Yeah.
Well, the other amusing thing I thought was that he is so far the only person to not cause a mouse droid to veer around him. Like he was walking along with the boss.
The mouse droid wasn't even scared.
No, the mouse droid came at him and he's like, oh, you have to walk around the mouse droid. So that's as far as he's, as low as he's fallen.
So that's. He's on the food chain. He's below the mouse droid.
Yeah, exactly.
Mouse droids just show up pretty much anywhere. And yeah. I read, they're used for maintenance and delivery. So I figured this one's from the mailroom, probably.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Have we done our 3 points? Or Jason, do you have another one?
Nope, I'm good.
James.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I lied. A little bit more about Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
Just a little, I'm glad to get her story. I do know she was in the Rebels animated series some, but I saw that so long ago. Mm. I don't really, but I think it was after this, right? So we didn't see how she kind of transitioned from, from being a senator to being the leader of the rebellion.
Yeah.
So we're going to see that.
Go
ahead. Because I'm going to change to something a little.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what everyone's prediction is. What's going to happen to her husband and daughter?
Oh.
Because when we see her later, she's clearly without her family. So
yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen there.
I hope they die. That would be cool.
Just get summarily executed.
Just for the top knot and the.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All
shall be revealed. Go on then, Jason. What was your other point you wanted to make?
I was worried that her friend at the social gathering who said, oh, I don't know, my politics might be too strong for you, that he was baiting her.
Yeah.
That he was hinting he was anti-empire to get her to confess so that he could catch her. That didn't turn out to be the case, but that's what I was a little bit worried about as it was happening.
Can while we're on this subject,
yeah.
So when she talks to him, what's his name? His name's Tay Colmer, the banker. Yeah. And she says, can I tell you something that only three people in the galaxy know? Now, it's obviously her and Luthen. Am I getting something wrong? Who's the third? Do we know the third person in this or not? Or am I just reading too much into it?
No,
yeah. No. I don't think you're reading, but that is interesting who the other two are.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it must be Luthen and his assistant, but then. It's definitely the assistant.
I just want Saw Gerrera. I just need Saw Gerrera somewhere. I just keep trying to pull him in somewhere.
I bet you there's a third, we don't know.
Yeah,
that she was
that we
implying.
Don't know about. Yeah.
But I love that line because there's only three people in the galaxy. We think of there's only three people in the city or the three people in the world, but they think in terms of the galaxy, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, that was one of my only in Star Wars. You just stole it, but that's okay.
Oh, jeez.
I'm just teasing. No, I'm just teasing. I love her space Cadillac, too. I'm sure you guys have talked about that. But
it's my favorite.
Rolls Royce.
Yeah, it's such a... go on, James.
Yeah. No, the car is amazing. No, sorry, I was just going to say how her performance in these scenes where she's talking to the Tay Colmer, I just thought it was like where she says, "You don't know Mon Mothma. This is a front. This is And I just thought it was a really, really good sort of scene where they're with the backdrop of Coruscant behind them, and she's basically pouring her heart out in a way to a lifelong friend.
Yeah,
just she's desperate to tell somebody
who
she can trust because she can't trust anybody. Her driver. Is obviously
husband
reporting in.
Yeah.
Husband's just sleazebag. You just can't trust. Full stop. So.
Yeah.
But it was
also scary to me. Like you got to pick and choose who you're going to reveal that information to.
Yeah, right.
But she clearly trusts this guy.
Yeah, implicitly because as you said, there's only three people in the galaxy. So she knows with the net tightening around her, as you can feel from every episode that. Tell the wrong person and she's gone. So, I really like her character and how they're developing it. So I am very interested to see how we go from this troubled, stressed senator to leader of the rebellion. So there's going to be a tipping point soon. probably in two episodes, I imagine. I'm guessing. Just guessing by the way the arc goes. We'll see.
And her costuming is so amazing, I think. I think the clothes, all the costuming throughout this is fantastic. And I loved that party. You know, remember the... you know, in another Rian Johnson moment of on Canto Bight, where the it was all a bit farcical and they had
cartoony,
kind of cartoony, exactly right. Whereas this party, which was a party of the elite, was much more believable, and I thought it was such a great scene, and all the costuming, and it was so gorgeously done and really thought through. And there was, you know, one alien there, but it was mostly, you know, mostly humanoid. But I think they're doing such a great job with all the kind of Japanese-inspired costuming on Coruscant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have that very, very nicely... It's very couture.
Yeah.
Like how the style. It's like you think it's Yoji High Society or something, or Dior or something. It's very... I'd be curious to see the background of the costume department, where they studied and stuff.
No, exactly right. And there was one other comment that she made, Mon Mothma made, and she mentioned the Grand Vizier, who was keeping an eye on their Separatist coalition now, and the Grand Vizier is Palpatine's right-hand man, basically. You know, the guy with the four horns, the two horns on his cheeks and the two horns up top. So she is getting the eye of the Emperor, but they're just looking into these meetings so far. So the eye is turning towards her. That's last week's
title.
She says
she's playing it very clever, and she knows they're all watching her. And as long as she just plays that she's an irritation to them, and you know, she's just niggling them and doing these things, they don't think to dig any deeper. They think, you know, she's just a pain in the ass. I imagine if she was just playing all like straight and clean, they'd be digging deeper.
Right.
Because she's like this irritation. So they're just like, ugh. It's her again. She's setting up another foundation for poor alien children. Fucking hell, here she comes.
But I think, like I said, behind. I think their tolerance level for even that is going down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, that's great. Well, well done, guys. So let's go to the notes section. Jason, got any notes for us?
Let's see. Last week, I was most bummed by Karis Nemec. Is that his name?
Yes.
The idealistic kid.
Yeah.
Maybe the least surprised. I kind of thought he was a goner the moment he stepped on screen, but I was still bummed about that.
I was surprised that he did die, because they put so much effort to him, and he almost... It was such a... new kind of character for Star Wars, you know, thoughtful and philosophical rather than kind of earnest or evil, that it was such a great character that I'm so shocked and actually pleased that they decide to kill him off, because this is now a series where no one is safe.
That's true. Good point. Yeah, I agree. I had that same feeling. Like, would they're putting a lot of effort, like the kinds of things he's saying, I have to pause it so I can think about it for a second to really bring it in, because he says so much in such a short time. And somebody on staff is a maniac. You know,
Tony Gilroy
in that writer's room. Exactly. I thought it was great just flying through Coruscant more. I love the idea of Coruscant before we ever saw it on film. I can't remember. I must have read it in a novel or something. The whole planet's covered in a city.
Yeah.
And it's just a like, that's one of the places I'd love to visit. If you could visit any Star Wars. So anyway, there's a lot of like cement looking structures I noticed this time, but they're so beautiful done. Beautifully done.
That's something I was going to touch on as well. Like when we have the cloak and dagger scene where Luthen's assistant goes off walking through the streets, it really felt like very Eastern European.
Right.
Like the subway station and the I don't know the technique of it, but the concrete almost feels like it's
very brutalist.
Concrete. It's brutalist. And then when they meet, I was looking at that, and I know obviously most of it is CG and it's built and stuff, but it really reminded me of the Barbican
center
in the
middle.
And it's because it's got that...
For our London listeners,
So the Barbican Center, I think, was built and designed in the 60s and has a very brutal concrete kind of very distinctive thing to it. And it basically has an art center within it, but it also has like apartments and everything and all the rest of it. It's very, very similar to how it's portrayed here. But that real mix of like a tiled floor and then like raw concrete.
Raw
and
concrete.
And
but lots of bridges as well, doesn't it? It has lots of walkways and bridges that, in it as well. It really is.
At different levels.
I remember going there in 1991 and being blown away about how futuristic and but Blade Runner futuristic it was when I first went there. I thought it's always stuck with me, that place. So, you know, give it a Google and have a look at it, because it really is an interesting thing. And I think it might actually be the part of the inspiration for the look and feel of Coruscant.
Well, back to you and your interesting come visit Scotland pitch last week of the castle. I just wonder if they actually filmed any of it actually in London, and just we'll have a dig into that as well. but yeah, again, the way Coruscant is shown, I think it's great, because it's like whenever I think the first times you saw it, like in the prequels or whatever, it was all shiny and space and
from metallic.
Whereas now it's got that real. I love these. We're getting these shots, like flyby shots, looking down. As I've mentioned before, it's almost like the way you see New York in films and stuff.
On your Apple TV. It's still got the Star Wars design, but it feels more real world.
It feels tangible, and you can see the levels. And when they're having that meeting, they're halfway down. You know, they're not on top like the Jedi and the Senate. They're about halfway down. You can look up, and there's so many levels above, but there's still so many levels below as well.
It's all about the levels in Coruscant, and you imagine that at the very bottom are just the scummiest people in the galaxy.
But that's where all the fun could be had, I imagine.
That's right.
That would be some classic.
Maybe a little up from the very bottom would be the most fun.
It was like Alphabet City in the 80s when I was living on Avenue A. Avenue A, you'd be fine. Avenue B, you get mugged. Avenue C, you get knifed.
You'd never come back from.
You'd be dead.
That's right. I don't know how much I want to say too much about this, but I think about the sequel series, and it just takes a lot of power from all this, because all this struggle, and then the Republic ends up being just inept and easily challenged by the First Order, and they're not even fighting, you know, and Leia has to raise some side army because the Senate won't listen to her. It's just all so stupid. And Han and Leia are divorced with a psycho for a kid. And Luke is a hermit who failed his students. And Rey is good at everything for no reason. And Palpatine's granddaughter. It's just so dumb. Like, the whole thing. The more time passes, the more I hate it.
The more I hate it. The more time passes, the more films slip through my fingers, and I hate them even more.
So I just try to pretend it doesn't exist. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, for fans, things I love about about the sequel series. They recaptured the energy of the originals that was completely lost in the prequels.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. Yeah. And visually it was cool. But other than that,
I really enjoyed, I came out of the theater satisfied when I sat there watching the first film.
Force Awakens.
Yeah, The Force Awakens. Like, I thought Rey was super cute when she's sitting there kind of munching on her food with the rebel with the X-Wing helmet on, you know, sitting in, and that moment when Han walks into the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. I thought there were some great moments, but came out going, oh yeah, I can't wait for the next one, as they handed off the lightsaber to Luke. I can't wait to see what happens with Luke and all of that. And then, of course,
I was actually kind of the opposite. I had a lot to like about Force Awakens, but so much to pick apart. And then when he took the lightsaber and flung it over his shoulder, I thought it was hilarious. But
that's really more funny. Yeah.
But as more time passes, I it hasn't held up as well for me either. No. None of the films have. But anyway, the only other note I had is that the next three episodes are written by Bo Willimon, who developed House of Cards on Netflix, which is
a really
intricate, like, political.
Yeah.
It was a very well done show. So I'm excited to see.
Is that the next three or the next two?
I think three. All written by the same guy. Yeah.
Well, maybe this whole three episode arc thing is going to go out the window. Then.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Or else I'm wrong, which is a distinct possibility.
Impossible. James, any notes?
I think we've covered everything. Oh, there's just one silly little thing where I'm going to prove wrong again. But you remember Luthen, where Mon Moth is leaving, and he's here. There's a great tight shot of his face, and it says, "We can't hide forever."
Yeah.
He looked very much like Palpatine in that shot. I don't know. Is he brother? Clone?
No. Sister.
Sister.
But sister. No.
I am your father.
It was almost not even so much the look, but it's just the cold determination and everything. I was like, all right, well, you know, two sides of the same coin, and all the rest of it stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, I love his character and stuff, but it was just just one little note I had from it I kind of liked. I think everything else we've gone over, really. I mean, we haven't mentioned it, but Cinta's like her little night run.
Oh yeah, I love
down
that.
Down the shale.
I love that. She's like snowboarding on her speeder down that hill.
Ripping through the shale at night with the old lens flare on the thing, and I thought that was good. So I'm pleased that she's clearly getting off world or doing something, because I was a bit concerned how she got left behind last week.
There was that line where I think it was Luthen.
She's doing what she's meant to be doing. That's the other thing we didn't talk about was Vel.
Yeah.
Vel's like unraveling week by week, and now she's been, you know, she looked amazing, bottled it last week. She looked gorgeous. But she's now, and her one task is to hunt down Cassian and kill him. She's clearly not going to do that, as we mentioned.
But will she try in earnest?
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to know.
Her reaction seems good. So here's my theory, that which I'm going to throw out there now, is that she's going to break him out of jail. Because he's going down for 6 years. So she's going to go look for him, find him. And then bust him out of jail and recruit him for the rebellion. That's my theory.
That was one thing I mentioned when I was rambling on about the Miami Vice bit.
Yeah.
Was I love it where he's put up in, you know, he's in front of the judge.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's shifted from 6 months to 6 years, changing guidelines. And she just goes, tell it to the emperor.
Yeah. I didn't do anything. Like, tell it to the emperor.
I'm a tourist. I'm a tourist. Tell it to the emperor.
And then they use the credit card rack that if you're of our age, you remember.
Oh, yeah, with the carbon thing. So, yeah. It'd be interesting to see how he's broken out of that. Yeah. And I wonder if...
That was like the DMV from hell right there. That practically, like,
quite a scene. Yeah. That was pretty rough. It's like, you know, there's no evidence whatever, and you go never 6 years. It's like, oh my god.
and the people administering it are like, I know. I can't do anything about it. Like, can we please get through this case log?
Yeah. The other note I had, which I still kind of pause and look in Luthen's store in his gallery, and I noticed a Gungan shield. You know, when the Gungans had the shields that they
glowy.
Had. The glowy shield was just leaning up against a wall. And there was a...
That store is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and there was this face mask which had kind of... I thought it looked like it might have been the Predator face mask, because it had... had some covering for the teeth, but who knows? It might have been just another one of the another alien, but it looked kind of predatory. So I'm going to keep pausing every time we go into the store. Let's see, don't have any other little notes. No, the other one was I loved watching her snowboard down the hill with her very cool speeder bike.
I like her character too, that she's kind of the opposite of Karis Nemec. She says very little, but has such presence, you know.
Mm.
She just seems like so solid.
Yep.
All right, that's great. That's our notes. Let's move on to the Only in Star Wars section. Okay, here we are in Only in Star Wars, where we find little scenes that kind of are amusing or interesting or just a very Star Wars defining. All right, lads, does anyone have anything?
I had a couple. I think we've already said both, but I'll repeat them anyway, only in Star Wars do people say in the galaxy instead of in the world. I want to tell you something only three people in the galaxy know about. I kind of like that. It's just like the whole world just has expanded to the galaxy, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then that's my other one. or do we take turns? Or
yeah, go for it. No, just tell us all yours.
Okay,
yeah.
It's just that only in Star Wars does a sea of office cubicles that are meant to evoke a life of boringness just look freaking gorgeous, you know.
Yeah, that was my one, was the sea of cubicles and like just the epic scale of what it was. It's like you could fill a Death Star with that.
Yeah,
just like there's probably a lot of on the Death Star. Maybe I don't know.
probably. Yeah, sort of profit and loss level.
Yeah,
accounting.
Yeah, accounting. Yes. Oh dear. But yeah, that was mine for this week, which we've already sort of covered off.
Yeah, so. The one that I liked was, it was great to when he gets to the sandals planet. It was great to see the long snouted alien on the beach, kind of yucking it up with the other lady, and it was like straight out of the cantina. But it was just it was like so kind of practical effects, but and so silly, but it still looked very cool, and it was really funny to see. And then I was thinking that the other only in Star Wars bit was we actually have flying cars. You know, there's no flying cars in Star Trek, I don't think. And but in Star Wars they do have the flying cars, and as we were saying before, and I've said it already, but that space caddy with the gull wing doors is now one of my favorite vehicles in all of Star Wars, I think.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's got a very Blade Runner feel to it. The sort of different levels of traffic that Coruscant has.
Have them in
yeah, I mean Blade this Blade show. Blade. Yeah, it feels Blade Runner-y in a lot of ways, which I love.
I think,
but only in Star Wars and Blade Runner.
Yeah, everyone listening will be pointing out, yelling at the phones. There's flying cars everywhere, you idiots.
I am wondering, why are you here?
Look out the window. Whoosh.
Yeah. Well, they have actually started to develop flying cars. The giant
fans. Like,
yeah, with that are like, what are they called?
You sent me that one. Is it a drone?
Drones,
to make a motor.
Yeah.
There is literally, it's going in production, in 2 years'
time? In 2 years' time, they've promised us for years.
I know. My 9-year-old self would be incredibly disappointed at 2022.
Yeah, exactly.
No tinfoil suits or flying cars.
Yeah, they really. Yeah, we're not all wearing matching outfits.
It's not Back to the Future sort of thing.
All right, that's great. All right,
hoverboard.
Let's move on to the news. All right, we have some news here. Jason sent me an article a while ago. Are you happy to read this one, Jason? Do you have that?
The comicbook.com?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. By Kofi Outlaw. That sounds like a Star Wars. Star Wars Andor's final trailer was released during D23 Expo 2022, and among the many highlights in the footage Tony Gilroy's put together, there was one that longtime Star Wars animation fans really loved, seeing Phase 2 clone troopers in live action. Any Star Wars geek knows that the bridge between the clone troopers of the Republic and the stormtroopers of the Galactic Empire is longer than just an overnight change. Star Wars Bad Batch animated series has put a microscope on what it meant for a specific squad of clone troopers to see the Republic era end and the Empire start to inch towards phasing clones out in favor of obedient ne'er-do-wells and desperate people collected or coerced into Imperial service. The Reign of the Empire era of the new Star Wars timeline and or the Bad Batch solo Star Wars comics has offered the unique perspective of seeing the Empire unfold and stumble through its earliest days. Phase 2 clone troopers are basically the epitome of that time period, clone troopers being repurposed into Imperial service with an armor that would later give way to the iconic stormtrooper armor we know and love. It's one thing to see the clone troopers based on Jango Fett all acting in zombified obedience after Palpatine enacted Order 66. It will be even more unnerving to see them acting like a collective swarm in live action as the Empire takes over more and more key territories in the galaxy.
Yeah, I thought that was super cool when those flashbacks were with Cassian, when to see that slit-faced armor that you'd only seen in the animated series. And I know, Jason, you went back and did a rewatch of all the Clone Wars before the Disney Plus Star Wars series comes up. So I hope we see some more of that, because it was very chilling to seeing a whole garrison of the old stormtroopers just kind of stop and turn and aim their weapons.
Yeah, like they have no will of their own anymore. Mm. Super
that
cool.
That's good. Okay, well, that's our news for this. Actually, I had one other thing. Oh, yeah, there was a meme I saw with Kylo Ren in it, and where he's doing the Burberry perfume commercial, and he's shirtless in these ads, and the line was, "I had no idea Kylo Ren was part of the Clone Wars," which I thought was very funny. Shirtless Kylo Ren was always weird.
Poor old Adam Driver. He's just trying to make some money. Leave him alone, Jonathan.
All right,
he's a good looking boy.
He is a good looking boy. All right, let's move on to the listener feedback. All right, welcome to the listener feedback section. Send in your comments at the Podcastica Facebook page or to talk@podcastica.com.
Another thing, you can come and join the group, the Podcastica group. It's really fun. I find the most engaged listeners of the podcast are there. That's where we get a lot of the comments that we read on all our podcasts. And if you go to podcastica.com and click the little Facebook button, I just changed that today to lead right to that group. So if you want to join, there's lots of discussion about your favorite shows and all your favorite hosts are there to interact with.
Yeah, great. That's nice. Where we got all the feedback from our Star Wars question of the week, and I'm going to be posting that next time. That was really, really good. Thanks, everyone, for that.
Yeah, it's amusing. It was good. And we're still waiting for that first voicemail, though. Come on, Ryan.
Oh, man.
Come on, Ryan Johnson. Yeah, just go to podcaster.com, go to the contact page, and hit the record voice message tab on the right. Do it. Or you can put one on your phone and email it into us at talk@podcastica.com.
All right. Our first letter comes from Ben Stone, who says, "Love this series. Great character development. Even for background characters, there's enough about them to want to know more. Have them mean something and have consequences to their paths and deaths. The writing is excellent." I agree, totally. The writing is excellent with some great funny or cutting one-liners. I get the feeling that it's not doing too well in viewership. I hope Disney don't shit their pants and overreact, as this is a series that will age well. Is that true? Do you guys know?
Yeah, I hear its numbers aren't amazing, and She-Hulk did better. Yeah, because I think as it's more mature, I don't think you're getting the younger audience watching it.
Oh, that sucks. I want everyone. It's five seasons, right? Is that what they say they want to do? Or
no, two seasons for this.
Two.
Oh, two. Okay. Well, yeah. And we're getting the second one for sure.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Okay. Good.
We're safe.
But it. But
I don't care if anyone else watches it. No.
But as other people say, it will age well. And it's all, and it's almost something that you can always watch, like you can come back to watch, and but it definitely isn't one for the kids, and but that's fine. That's why I'm really enjoying it.
I think that's good in a way. I'm glad that they didn't play to that, because then this is one, you know, for us old.
Yeah, you need different kinds of things. And then
people of a certain age.
And then those kids who aren't watching it now will, in maybe in 5 years' time, they'll discover it, and then they'll go, "Oh, okay," that, you know, and they'll binge it then and appreciate it.
Yeah, and hopefully
they're going to grow up. Everybody grows up.
Yeah, exactly. Is that we don't, you know, we don't need to see sort of Technicolor scooter bikes. Anyway, we'll leave Boba Fett. Leave him. Yeah. He's gone. Yes. Anyway, Rita Cantanella Orell says, "The set designing is incredible, and I'm transfixed with watching this show. I couldn't agree more. I'm loving every bit of the set design, the costume design. I mean, it's just, it's a work of art, and clearly a passion project for everyone who's on it. I think it's pretty amazing."
Yeah, so I agree. It's good. And Steve Barr says, "Good job by the Shore Trooper stopping Cassian before he can kill anyone on Namos."
good point. Yeah, his goal is to kill somebody on every planet.
His streak is over.
Yeah. Right.
There's still time.
So cheer for Cyril Karn and, you know, what's the girl's name that we like? The woman, I mean?
Dedra.
Miro.
Dedra
Miro. Yeah. They're just keeping these criminals from doing any more harm.
Well, I don't know. Hold on. He's got 6 years. He's going to shiv somebody in prison. I'm pretty sure. There's going to be some hardcore shiv.
It's another ne'er-do-well. We don't care. It's fine.
Oh, harsh. I mean, the come on, they're all ne'er-do-wells. Everyone's doing 6 years for nothing. For jaywalking, 6 years now. Like, Palpatine's just crashing.
The law is the law.
Release your anger.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Back to your cubicle. Back to your
I'm
cubicle.
Just kidding, by the way.
But yes, Jason runs podcasting like the Empire. Everyone is under his thumb.
My collar is tightening now.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. That's our show.
And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, you can find out about all our other shows that we're podcasting on.
Yeah, and Jason, what are you working on at the moment?
On the final 8 episodes of The Walking Dead.
I haven't had a chance to catch up yet. How's it going without any spoilers?
I think it's fantastic. Oh, I really do. And I think once you get a you might find it's a bit of a slow start, but once you get a couple episodes in,
I'm going to binge whatever's available this week. So I'll hopefully be able to catch up and send in some messages because I can't wait.
Yeah.
I think I'm on episode 16 of it at the moment. I think that's where I'm got. So how many is there to go in this one, Jason?
24. 22? So
24. Wow. Right, yeah. You're right. It starts off slow, but then it gets very good. So,
And James can't say much about it, but he has been shooting the poster for the City of the Dead with Negan and Maggie, who worked with them last weekend.
I was with them last
weekend. Awesome, that's cool.
It was good. Yeah,
it was good.
They were great. Just like Jeffrey's like hilarious. He's really really funny
But we have NDAs, so say no more, James. Say no more.
I will say no more. Lauren Blesser was a trooper. She was covered in bruises from stunt work, but she was awesome as well. So it's good. But they're a great bunch.
Yeah. All right. So if you're listening to this on House Podcastica, but you're not interested in the other shows there, and how could you not be? But we also have the podcast just for Star Wars shows, which you can also find at podcastica.com or search for the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app.
And I'll say it again. I say it every time. Don't forget to rate us and review us. Tell your friends. Come on. It's not that bad. Come on. We're trying to get this bigger. Everyone, grow the podcast. Grow the podcast.
If you just want to help us come up higher in the search results, get more listeners, just subscribe to the podcast. You can rate it and review it. But subscribing and downloading, I've found, is the most important thing. Yeah,
yeah. We did a big drive recently with all the shows, and they really jumped up in all the... in all the ratings, and new people found us, and we really want to grow this community. But that's our show. And any last thoughts, Jason, as you leave us? Thanks for coming on. It was really great to have you here.
It was fun, and I already liked the show, but I think I like it a little better now. So that usually happens with podcasting, and I appreciate you guys for just showing me some of the cooler aspects of it. Thank you.
Thanks for coming, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. I'm James.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Jonathan.
May the force be with you.
When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and matching technology that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 75% of employers claim Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other online job sites. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences daily, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Join today by heading to Indeed.com/podcasts5 and get a £100 sponsored job credit. That's Indeed.com/podcasts5. Terms and conditions apply.
When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and matching technology that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 75% of employers claim Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other online job sites, leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences daily. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Join today by heading to Indeed.com/podcasts9 and get a £100 sponsored job credit. That's Indeed.com/podcasts9. Terms and conditions apply.